You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hi, Susans. This is Carolyn's wife, Cecilia, here to let you know that this is a really great episode about trauma. But we wanted to give those who need it a trigger warning as they touch on topics like sexual assault and eating disorders.
Babe, are you playing with my equipment again?
Nope.
I've had many a story where I've made a girl go into the bathroom with me and do naughty things.
Did the women know that that's what they were getting into, or was it just like a Marina Jenny situation?
Twice they did, but then the other times I'm not sure.
I'm dyking out, we're dyking out. Let's dyke out together, see what it's all about.
Dyking out!
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast hosted by two dykes trying to round up the most interesting and badass humans in our community. I'm Carolyn Bergier, and guess what? We have our new co-host in place, and I'm so excited about this because there were so many great dykes who filled in as co-hosts over the past couple months, and thanks for everyone for sticking it out while I was basically dating, and we all know how much I hate dating, so I'm happy to settle down. They were all so funny and so much fun to record with. But ultimately, it came down to some important factors, which were who masturbates the most and who has access to a Dodge Caravan. And I think we all know who that is. Reveal yourself.
Susans, it's Melody. I masturbated this morning for good luck as I embark on this journey. And I'm so excited. Carolyn just told me last night I have not been able to sleep since. So if I'm messy with my words today, that's why.
I think we're going to have a new segment on the podcast that's just like Melody's masturbation diary.
Yes.
And then you have to let us know at every recording whether or not you have masturbated yet.
I'm into that. And yeah. Then I think we should do like squirting stories on the Patreon about that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Hey, if you want to hear in detail about Melody squirting, that is officially now going to be our Patreon content. And now that the L word's over and we're not going to be recapping that anymore, I think squirting stories is
a seamless move.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And today we are dyking out with singer Samantha Sidley about overcoming trauma. Samantha is an LA-based jazz singer and interpreter whose album Interior Person is out now. Welcome, Samantha.
Hello.
So happy to have you here. A quick announcement for anybody who's going to be in New York Monday, February 24th, it's our next show, Diking Out at Stonewall. So we'll be at Stonewall with the lineup, as usual, of some of the funniest comics in New York who just happen to be queer for the most part. I'm letting one straight in this time. I think this is the first time I'm letting a hetero infiltrate our sacred show at Stonewall, but I'm going to make her make out with somebody beforehand. So it's going to...
She's very gay passing.
Yeah, so. Very gay passing. And before she steps in, she's just going to have to like finger bang someone. No. it's going to be a good time. And then Rita Brent from our last episode is going to be on the lineup as well, making her Diking Out at Stonewall debut. And Melody, are you going to be joining me on stage?
Yeah, we're going to start co-hosting the show together, right?
Yeah, we better write some bits.
Yes.
We better figure that out. Some choreography.
Bear with us.
After last night's show, I think one of us needs to learn how to tap dance.
Oh my God. Yeah. We saw tap dancing last night at our guest show.
Yes.
And Tappy Make Me Happy too.
Yeah.
They had a review on Broadway World, was it?
Yeah.
Where the reviewer said, Tappy Make Me Happy, your best friend is a tap dancer who joins you on stage for a couple songs. And I have been watching a lot of her videos this morning, I have to admit, because it made me very happy.
Yes.
It's incredible. Melinda Sullivan.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Samantha, rumor has it that you turned down the chance to perform backup for Elton John at the Oscars just to dike out with us today.
I did. I did. It's a true story.
No, you turned down to be in New York. You have this run at the Green Room 42, which is a cabaret venue in Yotel, just a little bit west of Times Square. And that's a hotel that's very near and dear to me, as I was telling Melody, because when my wife and I first started hooking up and she was going through a divorce, so she was living in hotels, and one of them was Yotel, and we were working together, so she would just like slip me a room key during the day, and then I'd like go meet her at night, and we would have like a lot of passionate start of the relationship sex in the Yotel.
That's hot.
The Yotel
slipping
just got
a
way
key.
It was a good time. So yeah, I was very excited to go. And then Melody and I went together. I did not bring Cecilia, and not only was she bummed that it was at Yotel, but I've been playing your album Interior Person all morning, and she kept saying, I can't believe you didn't take me to see this. But you know what? You're playing another show tonight, which, sorry, listeners, you can't go because this is coming out in the future. But I was toying with the idea of coming again tonight.
Yeah.
It was just like so enjoyable.
Thank you.
Your music is so great and it's been getting great reviews.
It has.
Yeah.
Like the Broadway World review.
I think it has mainstream appeal for sure.
I do too. I mean, like satellite radio, there's so many people, you know. I think that there's an audience for everything now.
Yeah. And listeners, like, you've got to check it out. I mean, the first song on it is called I Like Girls. Tell us a little bit about what you were trying to do with this album.
It shifted so many different times. Originally, I wanted to write like a one-woman musical, and I started doing shows, and I was just singing jazz standards, and Barb, my wife, and some friends of mine would come to my shows all the time, and they were like, I want to help you write your musical. I want to write songs for you, and so they started writing me songs. Sometimes I'd pitch like can you write me a song called Interior Person? Like, I asked to do that because I liked that. I just thought of it one day and was like, that's beautiful, but I don't know how to write songs. Or I don't like any songs that I write. And so, you know, they started writing me these songs, and somewhere along the line, Barb said to me, I'm going to produce your record one day. And I was like, I didn't even believe her. And then Inara, another one of the songwriters, was like, well, I'm starting a record label, so I want to put out your record. And so Barbara was like, let's do this. And so we ended up making a record instead of the musical. But
that is amazing. And also that Barb, who is here, so if you hear giggles in the background, that too. And I am obsessed because
Barb plays the drums.
She's an amazing
for
drummer.
You and an amazing writer to see all the credits on the album and how much you wrote of it and that you produced it too. But the entire time you're performing, you look like you are having the time of your life. Like you are just so happy and you just look at her so lovingly. And it is, I was just like swooning the whole time. I'm like, these two. I know. Like Melody and I kept looking at each other and we're like, we can't handle this. This
is squealing.
Like, yeah. I like, this makes me so happy to watch. So, wow. How long have you been singing for?
I've been singing my whole life.
I have to imagine. Yeah.
I really have. And it was just like,
it'd be weird if like you turned 17 and all of a sudden we're like, whoa.
Yeah, that didn't.
Maybe I'll try this singing thing.
I was always just singing and my parents weren't musicians, but my best friend, who I've known since I was 2 years old and she's coming to the show tonight.
Yes.
Her dad was a musician and he told my parents, he was like, you know, your daughter can really sing. Like other little 3-year-olds can't like match notes and tones. And so my parents were like, okay. And my dad just started like playing me music that he wanted me to learn. And so he was kind of Nazi-ish about it. But I wasn't allowed to listen to the radio.
Oh.
So I only really listened to Billie Holiday and like Oscar Peterson.
I mean, not bad.
Yeah. But I just like, I grew up and I thought I was such a weirdo. But then I realized I was like, it was pretty cool, actually.
There was a song that sounded so Billie Holiday-esque last night towards the end. I even wrote it down. Wait. It was like the second to last song, maybe?
It wasn't Butterfly in My Ass.
No, no. Okay. But I do want to talk about the origin story.
Yes.
Of the last song you played.
Yeah.
I always make Barb tell the story because she's such a good storyteller. But basically in 1974, Barb's grandma, to loosen up her grandfather, gave him a giant, it's like 6 feet. It's
across,
huge.
Yeah.
It's ginormous. Painting of a beautiful pink naked woman with long, luscious red hair. You can actually look it up on the internet.
Okay.
And there was a lewd sentence at the bottom of the painting that was covered up because grandpa couldn't handle it. And years passed. He gave the painting to Barb's mom, who was also a lesbian. She came out. She came out 2 years before Barb did. But you know, all of Barb's friends wanted to go and hang out at the lesbian house and like that, this like big painting of a naked woman. And we're like, this is the place to be. And years pass after that. And Barb's mom moves and she says, hey, do you want that painting of the naked lady? And we were like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we noticed, and Barb had never noticed it before, but there was like the covered up lewd sentence. And it's like a matching piece of paper. It's hard to see.
Yeah, it looks like framing almost.
Yeah, it looks like a framing. And so we opened it up and took it off. And the sentence was, I have a butterfly in my ass.
Oh, my God. Barb just pulled up the... This is not what I was expecting at all. Okay, so what I was picturing in my head... I'm going to have to post this on Facebook. Was like one of those kind of vintagey, like almost French type art prints of a woman. Mm-hmm. But this is like ass in the air. Yeah. Like,
oh, let me see.
Big tit out, like poison ivy porn looking. This is amazing. No wonder.
Oh, yeah, Barb's that wasn't what I was expecting either.
If that was in my house, my sister would also be gay, I think. I think it wouldn't have stopped at me. Oh, my God. Wow, that is amazing. thank you so much for sharing that. And then you made that a song.
They made that a song.
Yeah, that's so great.
And I like to interpret in my mind... I'm like, it's the opposite of a cork in your ass.
Yeah.
It's a butterfly.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
There's also like a, because Barb and this, Alex Lilly, who wrote the song with Barb, they know me so well, but there's in the bridge of the song, I say the girls are in the bathroom and they're not there to cry, because I've had many a story where I've made a girl go into the bathroom with me and do naughty things.
Did the women know that that's what they were getting into, or was it just like a Marina Jenny situation?
Twice they did, but then the other times I'm not sure.
I think that's a great move.
That's a classic move.
I know. I wish I had thought of that when I was in college, I think.
Yeah, I wish I had that song to listen to when I was in college. Like, you even mentioned this last night, that you grew up not having like queer songs to relate to. And there was like a Beach Boys, Brian Wilson-esque song. You had said that before.
Busy doing nothing.
Yeah, I'm so glad I have just a few more queer songs to relate to, because it is still so scarce.
Yeah, well, especially in when it comes to like jazz and that kind of music, like now we're hearing it a little bit more in pop. And of course, there are artists like Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah.
But I've never really heard anything in the realm of what you do that plays with like pronouns and is just like very unapologetically queer. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. And like when you were, did you ever get any pushback from that? Or were people like, at this point in time, are they finally like excited and not like, oh no, you can't do that?
Honestly, because I'd stopped singing for a while.
Yeah.
Like when I started singing again and I realized that I should be changing the pronouns, because singing is, I like to say, the Olympics of talking. It's just storytelling. So it should be very, very personal.
Yeah.
I was at that point, this episode's about trauma, I just didn't give a fuck anymore. And I was like, I don't care what people think of me and if this is weird. And I did have to perform to, like, one time I did this performance in like Laguna Beach for a bunch of people of a certain age. And they were all white and white haired. And I just went out there and I was like, I have no idea what this is going to be like. And my first song was I Like Girls. And they loved it.
Yeah.
And this one, these three women, like in their 70s, came up to me and they were like, thank you. And they like were dressed like, you know, like suits and like fancy, like golf-ish attire. And this other one was like, and you have great arms. And like very Blanche Devereaux, you know?
And then she invited you to the bathroom.
Then we went to the bathroom. But it just made me realize, like, you really can't judge your audience. It's in the same way that I never really, like, I just love music. So I was never like, oh, too bad John Lennon's straight, you know?
I
he sings about love and I think about who I love and it makes sense to me. And
sure.
So my hope is that it's the same for people who listen to my music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing that you brought up last night that you said to ask you about it after the show, so I'm going to ask that when you were in New York, you accidentally smoked crack.
Now, I did.
To be clear, it's not this past time.
It's not.
It didn't happen this morning on your way here or anything.
Well,
yeah.
I was just a young 21-year-old stoner, and I was, you know, I'm a California girl. Sorry, New York. I love New York, but I am just a California girl, just kind of cliche, walking around being like, anybody got some pot?
Yeah.
And I should have known better that that's not what you ask people on the street in New York. in Brooklyn, in 2006.
Oh, God.
And I walked up to a guy, and he was like, which now I think I'm like, it's interesting that he wanted to share it in the first place, because I feel like most crackheads don't want to share their crack. But I was like, is that pot? I didn't know what a crack pipe looked like.
Sure.
Not that I'm like, I was like super prude. I just didn't know what a crack pipe looked like. But
that would have been me in my early 20s. I don't think I knew.
That could be me today.
Yeah. Well, sorry you're better than all of us, Melody.
So I was like, can I have a hit of that? And he like looked at me and like kind of wanted me over. And I was like, oh, just give me the fucking hit. And then he did. And the moment I breathed it in, I knew it wasn't. was like crack is whack.
Like, what is that like? Did it just feel like poison?
Well, it did, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't meth because I've heard meth is fantastic, actually, and it really wasn't fantastic. All I remember is I was staying with somebody who had a little kid, and they had this giant teddy bear, and the teddy bear was like terrifying, and it felt like, you know, in like kind of cheesy shows when they're trying to show that somebody's on drugs and like the camera's going sideways and zippy zap zap. Well, that's kind of true.
I
felt like I was like, where am I? And everything is a strobe light.
Yeah,
it was really bad. And it, like, the high part of it only lasts like a good 15 minutes, but I felt sick for like 2 days.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And out of my mind. Like, I felt out of my mind more than usual.
Oh, my God. That's straight up an episode of Girls on HBO. There was, like, one episode where Hannah accidentally smokes crack.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. It's not an uncommon thing, because I remember when that episode happened, like, a bunch of people I knew were, like... Because people are like, oh, that's not realistic. And other people are like, oh, no, I've also accidentally smoked crack.
Yeah.
And that is a more frequent occurrence, you would think, especially living in New York.
Yeah. Especially in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I have quite a few friends who like accidentally smoked crack. And one person who accidentally smoked PCP, which was way worse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. My mom ever listens to this, she'll be like, see, because she's always like, you don't want to smoke pot because you don't know what it's laced with. Like, that's always been her thing of like, convinced that everything is laced with.
That was the cautionary tale kind of with smoking weed.
Yeah.
It can happen, apparently.
Yep. I mean, that's kind of why I only buy it where it's legal. I mean, I know it's like kind of changing, but when I go to California, I like that I can walk into a dispensary and know that I'm not going to accidentally buy crack. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, dispensaries, I hope you're listening. You need to chill out that weed. It is too strong. It is as bad as crack. I have thought I was going to have to go to the hospital multiple times. So.
Yeah, it is for like older people who like smoked it as a kid and then they're like, oh, maybe now that it's legal, I'll get some. And then they're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
It's so powerful now.
It's so different. Yeah.
My best friend's mom is like an ex Woodstock hippie type woman who's always asking us to get her weed. And as we walk away from her, she's always screaming, and I'm not talking about that like chemical lace, like give me grass. Yeah. I want grass. You understand the
grass.
Difference?
Yes.
Grass.
I love this woman.
It's like, I want seeds in it.
Bring swag back.
I was 100% thinking, like, they all call it grass. Like, the weaker says grass.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, so let's just keep the fun times rolling and talk about trauma.
Hello.
And overcoming it. And because
I haven't overcome it.
Yeah. Or, well, the process of trying to, because that's a great point.
I meant that to be cheeky, but it's true.
No, but that is true, that a lot, like, trauma is something that unfortunately sticks with you for the rest of your life, and it's just more about like managing it and finding ways to like cope and process. And and I've learned a lot about this through my wife, who has PTSD and goes to a lot of therapy and like reads a lot of books and does a lot of like self-care stuff and in order to manage it. And she used to always say, like, do you think I'll get better, do you think I'll get better? And I'm like, that's such a sad state of mind to think of, like, that you're just, like, damaged because of this or something. Because of that. But it's, like, to me,
she's... never ending.
Yeah, it's, like, it's never ending. But I'm also, like, but, like, it's not, like, what happened to you makes you, like, a bad person or anything like that. Like, you're amazing and you're incredible. And even though you had... this thing happened to you, that's not your fault at all. yeah, I don't know. It's just something. And then it's something that, especially in the queer community, like so many queer people have had trauma in many ways. And especially for women, I know in the queer community have had sexual trauma of sorts, seems to be.
I really don't know. My personal opinion, I don't know one woman in this world that hasn't had some sort of sexual trauma. Maybe on the spectrum of sexual trauma, it might be low, like some man said something disgusting to her. But to me, that's traumatic because women are so conditioned to behave, to be a certain way that the systemic part of it is traumatic to me. So I'm a believer. I don't compare traumas. Your body doesn't know the difference.
Right.
Your adrenal glands aren't like, well, he touched her boob and she was raped and that's way worse. Like, your body doesn't know. It's just going to send out cortisol and be like, this fucking sucks. And so,
that's true. I mean, because I haven't been raped, but I have been like groped in clubs and, you know, guys used to just like walk up to me and like slap me on the ass or grab at my ass or grab at more than my ass. And then I never used to think that I could consider that any type of like violation. I was just like, oh, that's just guys being, being creeps or like, you know, once, a guy woke me up while I was sleeping and asked me to have sex with him. And it was when I was in a hostel and I thought I was gonna be raped. I wasn't. When I like screamed, no, go away, he actually went away.
But the adrenaline still.
But the adrenaline and my response to it and just like sitting in that room thinking like, what if he changes his mind and like not knowing what to do and all of that stuff. So it's like, all like there's so many different degrees of it.
I love that you brought up that you don't like to compare trauma. I, when I lived in Chicago, I used to go to the YWCA for free weekly counseling. Like they just gave it free therapy weekly to women. And the only prerequisite was that you identify as a woman and you have experience any kind of like sexual trauma. And I was like, okay, so most women. And the first like month or two of my sessions was me just undoing a lot of like self-talk that I didn't belong there, like that I felt like I was taking someone else's spot who needed it more. And her just convincing me that my trauma was valid. And I'm literally diagnosed with PTSD. Not for, so much trauma, but this specific diagnosis was not from the sexual trauma that I did experience as a kid, but from like a really terrible car wreck. And I felt like I was taking up someone's spot like in that therapy who was absolutely raped, but it's all valid.
It's
so valid. I did end up going to a rehab, which I know not everybody could afford. And I will say I'm very, I was able to go at that time. And I remember everybody in my group, because they put us in like little groups, we would all be like, oh, your story's way worse than mine. Your story's way worse than mine. And at one point we were all like, you can't, can't do that, you know? And I remember somebody who I thought story was way worse than mine and I shouldn't be complaining. She thought the same thing about me. So I mean, I've never been in a car accident that, I mean, and I get scared all the time. It's terrifying. Like, you can't compare traumas.
To be like completely blunt, I was like molested as a kid, but I didn't even consider that to be my trauma. Like it was this car accident, like, but I was really just burying that memory up until the car accident happened. And then afterwards, it was like this huge pileup on the highway. There were two tractor trailers involved, three cars. My car flipped, like I was thrashed around. It is like, and it, I have the PTSD diagnosis because I really thought I was going to die. At one point, I was in the middle lane on the Mass Pike outside of Boston. Facing oncoming traffic, and I just like squeezed my eyes shut. I'm like, this is how I die. And luckily I was like hit and pushed to the side of the road after all of this. But it's because of that that a lot of my childhood sexual abuse eventually started bubbling up, because I had like unlocked this trauma center in my head or something. But the way my PTSD manifests is that I always feel like there's someone behind me with a gun, and it makes no sense. At least it didn't until I went to therapy, and she's like, no, the impact came at you from behind. Like, you don't you hold a lot of trauma in your neck, you know, like it's not really logical most of the time. It's just even held in different places of your body. Like I never feel safe. If I'm walking alone at night, I'm always convinced I'm going to turn around and there's someone with a gun, but that's just because a car hit me from behind. So it can manifest in so many crazy ways.
My mom, you know, lived through the Vietnam War and everything, and her roommate's boyfriend, when he came back, he for years and years and years would sleep with his shoes on. Because his body just was so ready to run for his life.
Yeah.
And he couldn't sleep without his shoes on.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a somatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard of that before too, where like one kind of trauma will unlock memories of a different repressed trauma or something. Like we had a listener once who wrote in about a traumatic car accident, and she had been hit by like a tractor trailer as a kid, like walking, and was like in a coma. And when she came out of it, like that was when she realized that she was gay, coming out of like a coma.
Yeah.
From a car accident. And like,
yeah, I came out actually not too long after the accident.
Yeah.
I didn't even put that together yet.
It's one of the common causes of becoming a dyke. It's just car accidents. Yeah.
That's how they get us.
Yeah. Yeah. The insurance companies aren't onto it yet.
I was hit by a man and I was like, absolutely not.
Don't think you can ram me ever again. All right. Oh God.
I mean, I have to say, I mean, that was my experience too. I mean, or has been my experience after I was raped. It felt like my life flashed before my eyes, and it felt like that was actually the smaller issue that happened to me in my whole life.
Wow.
And yeah, I didn't go to very much therapy when I was a kid, but every time I did, the therapist would always say, "It sounds like you have sexual trauma." And I would say, no, I don't have any. And when I went to this rehab, I had this amazing therapist, and we did something called
EMDR.
EMDR.
Yes.
And she was really special, this woman. I'll just say her name. Her name was Pallavi Gupta. She I will, because she's a genius.
Yeah.
And literally changed my life. And in the EMDR session, I was just telling her stories of my childhood, and she stopped the tape. You watch these like lights going, and it you have alternating buzzing in your hand, each hand, and what it does is it helps, because it's working both sides of your brain. It helps you remember traumas and release them physically release them. It sounded like mumbo jumbo to me, but it was the best therapy I've ever had.
Wow.
And but so Pallavi stopped the rolling, and she was like, "What?" And I told her that I was like, "Yeah, this was just normal." And I think that, like, you know, with a lot of childhood trauma, and I really loved the way they touched on this in the with Oprah in the Michael Jackson documentary, was that you accept what's happening to you because you're a dependent.
Yeah.
And you and adults are right. And and also they're literally pressing your button. So it doesn't necessarily feel that wrong. You don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, I never told anybody about it because I thought it was weird, but I didn't think it was abuse.
Right.
But it was absolutely abuse.
Yeah.
And my body registered it as abuse. And, you know, I have physical symptoms that that's how the therapist knew, because I would say, oh, well, this happens to me, and I won't go into it because it's pretty graphic. But like, you know, it was just these are the symptoms of what can happen to you when a child goes through that.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to officially try EMDR. It's been pitched to me by therapists a lot, and most recently an acupuncturist who was like, holy shit, you hold so much tension and trauma, and like you're the back and the neck. So what, it's like tapping too? You're going to different rhythms?
Yeah, so tapping can actually like help you calm down. And it's kind of like a lovely thing, because you can do it in any situation and nobody knows that you're tapping. I mean, you can be in line at Trader Joe's and and be like, I'm stressed out. And
yeah.
But in EMDR, you hold this machine. It's like these two little eggs, kind of like a vibrator.
I'm listening.
And they alternate.
I don't think Melody can handle it. I don't think you're allowed near the vibrating eggs.
No. I'll take things a whole new direction.
And you just hold them and then you alternate. The buzzing alternates from right to left, right to left. And you watch this, like, it's like a long, like, kind of like strip of light. And it's just these lights, like little dots that go back and forth, back and forth. And that is optional, but I did it because sometimes it makes people nauseous.
Mm.
My therapist, Pallavi, would always start the session. She'd say, okay, we're going to go to your big library. Imagine this big library. Imagine this, like, I don't know why I had this library underground, because I was really into this show called Avatar and the Last Airbender, and there's an episode where they go to a library.
All right.
Yes,
I've heard good things. I've heard good things.
I've seen it 5 times.
Yeah.
That is my happy place. That if you have trauma, that is, it's healing.
Can I just say that my wife watches Everybody Loves Raymond, like, mm-hmm. through over and over, because that was something that she watched when she was younger, and it's like kind of this a way that she copes with trauma. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just very calming for her to have Everybody Loves Raymond in the background. And when we first started dating, I would make a lot of jokes about how much I'm like, I'm surprised Amazon hasn't come here to check on you and make sure you're okay, because this is more Everybody Loves Raymond than anybody should ever watch.
So, but now I'm going to watch Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm always looking for, like, shows. The Golden Girls, yeah, is another
Golden
one.
Girls. Yep. Golden, that's Girls. That's the other, yeah, one. Yes. That's the other one. She finally, when she finally stopped, she went back to Golden Girls. I'm like, okay, this is, I can get on board with, like, Golden Girls all the time. And, like, now just from hearing in the background, I know every Golden Girls episode. I'm like, oh, it's the one where the gay friend comes to town.
This is, you're really melting my heart, because when I met Barb, I was obsessed with watching shows, because, yeah, that's how I calm down. And even, yes, like after I perform a show and I've had a lot of social stuff, I have to calm down. Like, yeah, I'm just, it's a lot for me. And and because when I'm on stage, I give 150%. That's
confirm,
true.
Confirm, saw that.
And so, you know, I just got, like, my body needs to relax. And so poor Barb, I've, like, forced her to, like, get into shows with me. But now, you know, we'll come home and I'll just be like, Gigi? And she'll be like, all right.
Yeah.
And so we watch shows all the time together. And that's our, that's our thing. We're kind of like a TV dinner,
yeah,
kind of couple.
Do you do that with songs too? Like, will you listen to the same song over and over?
I do.
Yeah.
Barb's a little more adventurous than I am.
Yeah.
She's, I will brag about her. She is a world-class, incredible musician. I look, yes, up to her very much as a musician. I was her fan. That's how I met her.
Yeah?
And she was somebody that I would listen to over and over again. She had a band called the Bell Brigade, and they're amazing. And,
all right.
With her brother. And it's rock and roll. It's totally, totally different than,
oh my gosh,
than
I
jazz.
Have to check it,
yeah,
out. Yeah.
She has a really great song that I think is such a great women's anthem, and it's called Be Like Him. That is so rad, and she sings it and plays drums, and it's really cool. It's from their second record.
And don't worry, listeners, because I have already asked Barb to be on the podcast, and we'll have another episode, yeah, at some point when we're out in LA. Yeah. Yes.
Barb always says, she's like, talk about you. You talk about me a lot, like, on stage. I'm like, I can't help it. You're a huge part in my life, and,
yes,
you mean everything to me.
I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like I did interrupt you because you were talking about Avatar the Last Airbender.
I don't even remember. Oh, so in EMDR, I'd go to the, yes, library underground. I think it was in the second season, second edition of Avatar, the Korra, where, who's actually a lesbian. She's one of the first cartoon characters that's a lesbian.
Yes, yeah, yes. This is the only reason, mm-hmm, I know about this.
But it's a little bit confusing because she also has, I guess she's bi. She's bi, okay, girl.
Nice.
But she, at the end there, she shares a kiss with the other main girl character, but it's like a little obscure, but apparently, okay, they're supposed to be lesbians.
Okay.
So I accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. But yeah, and so I'd open this book and she'd say, okay, talk about anything. And a lot of weird stuff was coming up. And I'm like, why aren't I talking about the rape that I just fucking survived? And like, but it was like middle school bullying kept coming up. And I was like, why am I so, I should be over this. This was 15 years ago or whatever. But no, it was still like a thing. And Yeah, I was severely bullied when I was in middle school, which I knew, but I thought just as an adult, you get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I was really, really bullied. So you don't get over it,
no.
I think. And even if you do think, it like manifests in different ways that you might be unaware of.
Yeah.
But yeah, that stays with
it
you.
Stays.
Yeah. That's so crazy because, yeah, I've had to really rethink all my thoughts about trauma in terms of both my experience with my wife and learning about her PTSD and seeing how it affects her every single day and all the different ways that it manifests, yeah, including like physical pains and yes, things like that. And then thinking about just kind of like the scale of trauma and what's traumatic and how some things that you think, because unfortunately, Cecilia, she's had multiple like traumatic things come to her. Mm-hmm. But there are certain ones that she seems like completely unfazed by or like she doesn't dwell on or whatever. And then others that are like really the ones. And I'm like, why aren't you ever upset about this horrible thing too? And it just like is so different for everyone. And even like when I was going through my divorce years ago and talking to a therapist then, she had asked about whether my ex-wife had been through any trauma. And I was like, no, she's had a great life. And then now I'm like, all right, idiot. Like everybody has trauma.
Everybody.
She also like fell off a balcony when she was 2 years old and they thought she was dead and was like bleeding out her ear and lost her speech. And then that like really affected, and you know, so yes, she had trauma. I just like didn't think, I was like, well, how could that affect her? That happened when she was two. She doesn't even remember that, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy.
But your brain, I mean, you make decisions in the moment and then they become your reality, and you're not, I mean, I don't know anybody who every step they take, they're, you know, trying to be objective of themselves, you know, we're just trying to live. And so, yeah, so it kind of, like, comes out. But, yeah, you brought up something that I have a really high pain tolerance. Like, it's surprisingly high because I'm such a such a diva in some ways. And you'd think I wouldn't, but I can, like...
I saw the heels you were wearing last night.
Understood.
Like, yeah. That's all you need to prove that you have a high tolerance for pain.
Yeah, I'm like a real singer. I accept the
cliches.
As
a queer woman, you could get away with flats and nobody would judge you.
I'm not that kind of queer woman. one of my best friends, he's a gay man. I always want him to go shopping with me and he's like, I'm not that gay.
He hates shopping.
He hates it and I have to drag him. Like, I'm like, please, I need your help. But anyway, like I can deal with people treating me badly or yelling at me, and sometimes it doesn't faze me. And Barb will say to me, she's like, that didn't piss you off? I'm going to write them a letter. I'm fucking pissed. And, and I'll be like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how my girlfriend is too. She's experienced a lot of sexual trauma. She was raped when she was 13, and then she had a very abusive boyfriend who would repeatedly like hurt her and rape her. And she just watches all these documentaries, like true crime. She's obsessed. Me and too. She's constantly watching these stories of just repeated rape and murder. And it's just so unfazed by it. But little things can set her off. If I crack my knuckles, she'll get devastated because the guy that she was with who used to abuse her cracked his knuckles. And it just sends her right into that place.
Yeah.
But she could be totally fine just watching very similar stories played out on TV that she went through and be unfazed by it.
I have noticed a lot of people that I know who are obsessed with true crime, me included, I feel like have had a lot of trauma and sexual trauma. And I feel like it's a way that we process it by hearing other stories. And I never compare myself to the stories, but I get involved in the story. It's kind of like fun entertainment for me. But But, you know, Barb will not watch that or listen to that stuff.
Like, yeah.
I cannot get her to. That's the one. She'll do Gigi with me, but yeah. not, like, some dark stuff.
It's heavy. Like, yeah. My girlfriend prefers it to fall asleep to. And I'm like, really can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, and my specific trauma was, like, childhood sexual abuse, right? Like, I don't relate that way. Like, I can't mm-hmm. watch things and, like... you know, or at least seek it out and really want to. Like, the Michael Jackson documentary was so hard for me to watch, but one thing that was like, I will watch this to completion. But yeah. I was in such a dark place for so long afterwards.
Oh, it ruined my life. Yeah. Especially because separate the artistry from the man, but like Michael Jackson, I literally work out to him like every day. And now I won't listen to him right now because I'm like, I've listened to you a lot. I think I got it all.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Bad record was one of the most important records to me that I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
And I realized like how much in denial I was. I mean, like, of course he was. You never saw him with little girls. Like, he had a type and like,
mm-hmm. yeah,
of course. Yeah. Of course. You know,
that documentary, also, I remember Cecilia for weeks after watching that was like in a funk, and I watched it. She had watched it without me, and then I watched it so that I could like understand, you know, more of like what was triggering her and upsetting her. And it made me like so angry and like filled with rage, and like to see all the people like. Still, like, how could you watch that and deny it?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
And to see how true these mm-hmm. two guys were, that how true their stories were to the experiences of people with trauma. It follows the same types of patterns of so many survivors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like to a T, and it's like if you think they're faking it, they would have had to like really dive into the same psychology books and come up with a plan to like go through the same, you know?
Yeah, with someone so celebrated that they're just public figures still like denying it. Like literally 2 days ago, Snoop Dogg posted about it and wrote like them lying ass kids.
Oh,
and everyone's just like, thank you, Snoop,
including Bill Cosby.
Oh yeah, he said.
Which, how is Bill Cosby tweeting? Innocent. How is he tweeting? Isn't he in prison?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think he's in jail.
He's in jail.
Yeah,
and he's tweeting in defense.
It's just nuts.
That makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Snoop.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
It's so complicated. And but, you know, if the Oprah special after was really, really good. And if it really disturbed you, I would say watch that because she's so amazing. And and she survived childhood abuse, too.
Yes.
And so the way she helps them talk about it and the way she explains it to people who don't understand is really, really on the mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. She's brilliant.
Oprah's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're a Chicago person.
That's
ground zero for Oprah fans, right?
No, I worked in video production in Chicago, too. So once her studio left there, like I worked with a lot of former producers and editors who also said good things of her. So,
yeah, she's the only person I think should be allowed to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think everyone's horrible and everyone's like shitting on billionaires and being like, people shouldn't have $1 billion. I'm like, totally agree, except Oprah.
Right.
Like, let her have it. I trust that she's doing good things with it. She's getting mani-pedis with Gail.
Hell yeah.
Let her do it. They're just painting straight up liquid gold onto their toenails.
That's fine.
Let her do it.
Yes.
Whatever brings that woman joy, let her have it. Oh my God.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Or when you experienced your sexual assault, you mentioned that you... Was that when you stopped singing?
No, I wasn't even singing at the time.
Okay.
And so I feel like I was... dealing with, I feel like I was living as a kind of a shell of a person, and I really didn't understand how to navigate danger. Mm. I didn't know what that looked like.
Yeah.
So this person that I worked for, he was obviously he's a sociopath, crazy person, and he totally did all. There was many red flags, but yeah. I didn't know what a red flag was.
Sure.
Because of my childhood sexual abuse and other physical abuse and stuff like that. But, you know, I just didn't. I had a rage. My dad was a rager. And so I could deal with anger things really well. And I come from a family of, you know, Jews who survived the pogroms and went to South Africa, which is the most traumatic place in the world. I'm one of them, you know. Yeah. It's just so I had seen a lot of things, and I had grown up accepting those things.
Yeah.
And not understanding. I mean, of course I knew like racism is horrible and makes no sense. But like but just like accepting these horrors of the world,
yeah,
as like kind of not recognizing when something dangerous was happening. If a man yelled at me, I'd be like, I got this. I know what that is.
Yeah.
Because I took care of my dad all the time.
Yeah.
So with this man, I just did not see the signs. And
sure.
Even as it led up to the actual rape, like it was like until he was like literally raping with me, I could accept that that was happening.
Yeah.
It was like my body shut off, my mind shut off, and I just... when I told a detective, because I did call the police, they were like, yeah, that's how you survived. How you survived.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, for sure.
There's a really good book about it by a man named Gavin DeBecker, who is a true straight male feminist. He wrote this book for women, but anybody can relate. I mean, anybody can read it, but he wrote it for women because there's so much violence against women.
Yeah.
And it's called The Gift of Fear.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that was the name of the author, but the whole time you were talking, I was thinking about The Gift of Fear. Yeah.
That book really, really, when I was reading it, he literally breaks down how to, in like systematically, like breaks down like A, B, C, how to sense danger, how to spot danger. And I was like, literally my rapist did every single one of these things.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know.
Yeah.
And so after that, when I went to rehab, I realized that I have to sing again. And I just, like, all the shows that I'd always been writing in my head.
Yeah.
I got my accompanist Dan record together, and I was like, can we do a show? And we started playing together, and it developed from there. And it was, like, very healing for me to do those shows because I could kind of, like... I sometimes do Is That All There Is, Peggy Lee's, and I like really, I do like a punk rock jazz version of it, and I like scream and yell in it. And so there's some fun times where I can like really tap into that and let go. And I also like to say my shows are about love. So like just getting on stage, and I always say to myself, I always do like, I bless the room before in my mind. I actually bless it with my vagina. I like imagine that there's blessings coming out of my vagina. Yes. And I'm like, to everybody in this room and every table, I will take care of you tonight. I will make you smile. Do not worry. Mama Sama is here. And so it's a healing thing for me. But yeah, I wasn't really singing. I would do like odd gigs now and then, but I wasn't making any money and I wasn't working. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I was like disabled pretty much.
Yeah.
Emotionally. But I would have never called myself that. I would have been like, sure. I look normal. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like it, you know. But that wasn't the truth.
And you were also was it around this time that you were dealing with Hashimoto's?
Yeah. Three years before I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and I know some people are fine with Hashimoto's, but I got so sick, and I think I had it in high school too. So it was just undiagnosed for so long.
Yeah.
That I almost went into a coma.
Oh my
gosh. Like your thyroid levels are supposed to be like between 0.5 and 4 or something. Mine were 237.
Whoa. Oh Jesus.
Like my body was like completely shutting down. And I remember feeling like, I don't understand why I'm alive. And I remember feeling like I'm not a suicidal person, but I remember feeling like I understand why people let themselves go.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand this point. I don't understand the point of living like this. And I had no idea that I had Hashimoto's, that it was a thyroid issue, that I needed this medicine.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm a slave to the FDA now, but like, I had.
Yeah.
I like to say my crack days were the carefree days. I didn't have any medications. Now I take 3 antidepressants and 5 thyroid medication. I don't eat gluten and la la la. I require a lot, but yeah. So I had been diagnosed with Hashimoto. So I thought my life had gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
But I've also like, I've dealt with death. I had a best friend that he was in a gang and he did a suicide by cop, and I had I identified his body. Like I thought that was an okay thing to do. And like, you know, it was just, and that wasn't even something that I registered as heavy.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to say goodbye to him.
Yeah.
Because I love him. And, you know, there was just, I've seen a lot of stuff for someone my age, but that just helps the music. That's what I say. It just helps the music. I think about all my heroes and like, all of the, I could compare traumas. I think about what it was like to be a black person in the 40s and like,
just Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I mean, Ella Fitzgerald. She lost her whole family.
Yeah. The hardest I've ever cried, I feel like in recent memory, was not too long after my accident, but I watched a PBS documentary on her life and
Something to Live For.
Yes. I bawled my eyes out, like dry heaved for like 2 hours after. Like it was very intense.
Oh my God.
I want to hug you for watching that.
I
love her so much. And I'm a dork for my cartoons and my shows and my jazz singers.
Yes.
I didn't know that. I mean, I listened to her. I have some of her vinyl and but I had no idea that.
Yeah, I just always enjoyed her music. And then I watched that. And now I just listen with like just such a deeper level and appreciation for her. She has had like all of the trauma.
That's crazy.
So much.
I mean, like, she's not like dark like Nina Simone where you can really feel it. And
sure.
Like, I feel like Nina Simone is telling you that she's had trauma. Nina Simone is one of the greats and my favorite, and I love the darkness.
Yeah.
But like with Ella, I feel like when I listen to her, it's like a triumph.
Yeah.
It's there's like this beauty, but knowing her story, that you know that there is pain that she is releasing through her beautiful voice.
It's
really awesome that you're able to like heal and process through singing. And I see my wife does that with her art. So she like paints and draws every day. Yeah. And a lot of her trauma and her experiences and her anger, because in person, she's like the sweetest person you could imagine. And you would, you would never guess just by being around her that she's had this like super traumatic past. And then you see her art and it's all just like knives going into eyes and like just very dark, dark stuff and like many knives. And, and yeah, but that's how she processes it and makes like these beautiful pieces of work through it. But it's, you know, it's different for everybody. Like, we had an episode of Diking Out where the topic was plants. And so many people, I was so surprised, so many listeners wrote in and talked about how they love to, like, garden and take care of plants. And that's how they, like, it's very healing to their past traumas and stuff like that. So, yeah, you don't have to be, like, a singer or a painter or a comedian to process all your stuff. Like, if you're a listener and you've had trauma, just like try different things and find what like brings you peace and good feelings when you're doing it.
And I will say, like, when I said I was a shell of a person, I've never admitted this publicly because I feel like there's a lot of misunderstandings of it, but I'm very safe right now. And but the way I processed my trauma I'm still going through it, but I developed a very, very intense eating disorder. And when I went to rehab, they said everybody who has eating disorders, that's a coping mechanism, or addiction. Addiction in general is a coping mechanism. So anytime I meet an addict, I'm always like, well, you have trauma that you need to sort through, and this is protecting you right now from that trauma, because sometimes your body isn't ready to release it.
Yeah.
And that's why you really want to, when you do go with EMDR, if you go to an EMDR, you want to work with a therapist that you really connect to. They might be a nice person, but, you know, try out a few people and then go with the person that you connect to the most, because you have to feel really safe, because your body is going to bring up stuff that somatically it may not be ready to like cope with. So you want to be really comfortable.
But I
just want to say, for people who are dealing with addiction issues, like, that's okay too. You just the answer is that you probably had trauma.
Yeah.
And that's how you're masking it. And that's how you're choosing to survive with it.
Yeah.
I had a eating disorder too, but I later found out in therapy, I gained a ton of weight after, like, I was a healthy kid. And then after the abuse happened, I just started eating more and I became like a food addict. And I eventually put on so much weight. I was like morbidly obese for a very long time. And it was because I eventually found out that I was kind of like making this wall around, like, I didn't want to be touched. Yeah. And I wanted to make myself as undesirable as possible.
Yes. That's a very common thing for people who gain weight because of trauma. And yeah, exactly that. I was surprised when I learned about that through hearing some friends talk about that.
Very real.
Yeah.
And just, by the way, because I just feel like eating disorders are so misunderstood. When you are obese, the same thing happens to your body breaks down in the same way that somebody who is severely underweight. Your cells start mutating. You can't. It's hard to survive, and that's why they're so dangerous. And I knew, like, in 2015, when I was coping with this, they said the number one death, more than violence, for women under 30 are eating disorders.
Oh yeah. Man.
I believe that. And so I just think I understand.
Yeah.
I really do.
They're so misunderstood. I mean, yeah, I remember my cousin had a pretty serious eating disorder, and she wouldn't eat or drink.
Oh.
Yeah, I've met people like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And had to be hospitalized and put on an IV because she just refused to drink. And her family, like, they couldn't understand what was happening, and nobody really thought that, you know, that there was trauma. They're like, I don't know, she was never like this, like, why all of a sudden is she you know? And thankfully now she's better, and she got the help, but it was just like so misunderstood by, and also like sad for the fit. They were so confused and like worried and didn't know what they could do to support somebody. Like, I guess that's a good question too. What are some things that friends and people like close in your life have done that have been very helpful for you as a survivor?
Oh, my friends have been so wonderful. I think just like calling and like checking up on me and spending time with me when I was really isolating and like, not leaving the house, you know, and like Alex Lilly, who wrote a lot of the songs for me, we weren't even that close at the time. She's best friends with Barb. They're like sisters. But Alex would like call me every day and be like, you want to go on a walk? And she would just come out with me. And I remember my eating disorder got much louder at the time. And I had also gained weight because, you know, I was eating food again and I was obsessed with that. And she was just saying, you're beautiful. And a lot of people don't like to talk about the way they look at all. That's another thing, which is also helpful. Sometimes I just like, I don't want to talk about body at all. Like sometimes people will comment on my body and be like, oh, I just kind of roll my eyes. But that's something that's very not helpful for people with eating disorders.
Right. Because, right.
Absolutely not. Because we don't identify with our bodies. We identify with our souls.
Yeah.
And it's not about that, you know? And that's just it for, I really believe in eating disorder as a mental illness. So it's like, if you start that spark, it's like giving an alcoholic a taste of alcohol. Saying, oh, just drink beer, don't drink wine or something. You know, it doesn't work like that. It makes if I hear about a new diet, like my mind goes crazy. So it's like those things aren't very helpful to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like if somebody says, oh, just eat vegan or something, you know, it's like, no, that doesn't.
Yeah.
I believe in the ethics of it, but like that doesn't work for me because I'm sick. I'm mentally ill in that way. And take diets to the next level. And so, but yeah, my friends just checking up with me and like not judging what I eat when I get all control-y about what I, you know, they just support me. And I did have a recent bout with anorexia and people were really upset by it. And I didn't, there was a part of me, like the sick part of me was like, don't talk to me about it. But the healthy part of me was like, people care about me and nobody wants to see somebody get up on stage and them to be sick.
Yeah.
Like it's not, it's scary, you know? And so I think like just people just calling me and being like, Sam, what's going on? Like, do you need help? Like, I love you. I support you is like, that has really warmed my heart. And and everybody who, you know, has been worried about me, I love you so much. And I am taking care of myself. I'm working on it. I'm a work in progress. As I said, I haven't recovered from my trauma yet, but
we're all a work in progress.
I'm working on it.
There's no shame in having stuff to work on. Yeah. Man, that, do you find like it can be tough living in LA too? Just because I feel everyone in LA is like so focused on.
Oh, they're obsessed.
Yeah.
New York's like that too, though.
Yeah.
One of the first things a woman who came to my show the other night said, she's like, oh, you lost so much weight. Like, I was like, she's like, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know. I was like, probably not healthy things that I'm going to share with you.
Yeah.
And I feel like with somebody who is like lost and gained weight as much as I have, it's like, obviously I have an eating disorders, but people don't know about eating disorders.
Sure.
So I feel like it's, I don't know. I'm not a soapboxy kind of gal. Like I don't share a lot on Instagram about like my personal life because I feel like I'm not articulate enough to argue politics, but I can just say like, I do believe that eating disorders are just a coping mechanism. They're an addiction like anything else. And please have empathy for us because we're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And especially women where we've been so brainwashed by diet culture and everybody is obsessed with our bodies and you have to be like this. And oh, celebrity, I saw them in real life and they were so small. And it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like nobody cares. Like it's not a big deal.
Well, and it's like all this pressure to be small and then, but then you're like, oh, you're too small. And then people get criticized and then, you know.
No, you can't which is another way of body shaming. Like even, it's very scary to see people severely, severely underweight or severely overweight, but you cannot body shame them.
Yeah.
You have to just emotionally support them.
Yeah.
And just have empathy because they're just trying to cope.
know, with whatever that has happened to them.
Yeah. Don't comment just on people's appearances because you don't know what they're going through. Like when I, like over the course of a year and a half, I lost a little over 100 pounds and I was just laser focused on it. But to the point that I actually like developed an eating disorder, like on the opposite end of the spectrum where I used to be addicted to food. Then I was suddenly addicted to not eating food. And I just, it was like my version of it was I couldn't swallow food. Like I would chew it and I could, like I would just spit it out.
Yeah.
And I dealt with that for a long time, but the praise I was getting like, oh my God, you look great. You look great. What are you doing? Like, just like keep it up.
Yeah.
And that registered as, all right, I'm just going to keep on keeping on. Like, like my teeth are rotting and like, I was like throwing up.
My teeth are fucked.
Yeah. Oh, my teeth are bad.
Yeah. That I will never forget one of the sickest I ever was. My eating disorder started out with binging also. And then I developed bulimia and I was probably, I couldn't leave the house. I totally isolated from all my friends. I was sick with Hashimoto's. So I didn't know I had a Hashimoto's. So I think that was part of it too, is that I didn't understand what was happening with my body.
Yeah.
And, and I was like throwing up like literally 10 times a day. And, that was my life. That was my life. And I would like get it together to go down to Trader Joe's and buy my special food. And this one woman was said to me, she was like, oh, you look really healthy. You must work out a lot. And I just was like, I wanted to say, no, I throw up 10 times a day and I'm barely surviving and I'm not getting my period and I'm really unhealthy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's
The commenting on people's bodies, like just don't. I mean,
like that's a safe choice.
Yeah. That's like the safest route. Like nobody's going to be mad at you for not commenting on their body. And I know, like, I'm sure I've been guilty of it in the past. And I remember, like, I gained some weight in college and then I lost it and lost even more over the summer and came back the next year, like, really thin and was like elated when people noticed and commented on it. But even then, I'm like recognizing how not good that was, and like had nobody said anything I also would have been totally fine. But like when people one of my friends was seeing a nutritionist and trying to lose weight in like a very like healthy, steady way, and people started commenting about how great she looked, and she wasn't losing like a ton of weight or anything like that, and it was making her so depressed that people were saying that, and it was like, did you not find me beautiful before? Like, it totally fucked with her. So it was, and I was thankful like that she communicated that and let everybody know, because I was kind of like, oh my God, would I have said something had I not known? Like sometimes you're just like not aware of it.
Because we've been brainwashed to think that is like, that is, makes us worthy.
Right.
Losing weight. Oh, I really succeeded at this diet. And it's like, that's anyway.
Yeah.
But I was going to also say, because I dated, another weight eating disorders form. And I've met a lot of people like this. And my ex, who is they would strap down their breasts all the time. And we both just wouldn't eat very much together. And I realized later on, oh, they had an eating disorder because they wanted their body to be really, really small and masculine. And they would not like barely eat anything. And it was about being really flat, you know, and more masculine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, girls and trans and theys and thems that I think, that like masculinity and that look, and that can be a way of coping with that is developing an eating disorder to like,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the gay male community.
Yeah. There's
so much body shaming that happens there. And it's like, if you're not a bear, you have to like be going to the gym and either be like super, super buff or be super skinny.
They deal with it so hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
My old roommate, gay male, who was a model and eventually had to stop because he developed such a bad eating disorder. And it's still, you still like see it in him, and he's in the gym like every day, and just like reading comments on his posts, like of these like sexy shoots, just like mining them for any kind of comment that would like then set him off.
Yeah.
When I went to my rehab, when I went there for trauma, and they were like, you have a raging eating disorder. We're going to make you primary eating disorder care. And with a secondary, we're going to treat your trauma. Because all people with eating disorders have trauma. And that's how I learned that. I like to call it eating disorder camp.
Yeah.
But I was terrified when I went, you know, like they take everything away. You don't have a cell phone. It's like going to jail.
Yeah.
It's going to like a therapy jail. But I was like, fuck, am I going to be the only gay person here? Like, is it going to be horrible? Am I going to have to be like, yes, I'm a lesbian. And people are like, what?
Yeah.
Which happens all the time because I'm super femme. So I don't look like a lesbian.
Yeah.
And, literally everybody in the eating disorder, we were all gay. All of us. It was really fun.
Community.
Boys and girls and everything.
I should put that in the marketing materials. I actually, when you first said that, I didn't realize that there was rehab for trauma.
Rehab for trauma, yeah. Rehab for mental illness, like bipolar. There was people there I had a friend that I made there that was there because she had debilitating anxiety. You can find resources and free resources too. Like there are so much 12-step stuff or just group therapy, free stuff, and that you can find. Like there is help out there. I promise you are not alone.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people don't, you know, with the current healthcare system, don't have access or might not know how to access affordable care and resources and therapy. I mean, I know I waited to go to therapy until my wife got a job that therapy was covered.
Yeah.
And then started unpacking a lot of stuff.
I know. Even if you, like, going back to friends, like, even if you have one friend that you feel really safe with talking to,
yeah,
and you could just say, can you just listen to me? Is that okay? You know, and that can even be really, really helpful because sometimes we just need somebody to hear our story. We just need to feel seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned like Instagram before and the, you know, social media can be so terrible for your brain and for so many things and comparing yourselves to other people and letting comments other people make affect you. The one thing, I mean, there's a good side to it as well, right? And people sharing their stories and sharing their trauma more to take the stigma out of it, mm-hmm. has been a great thing to see, especially with like Me Too and all of that stuff. But one thing, like, I felt like when I started seeing my wife and she was telling me about her experiences and her trauma, I could sense that she carried a lot of shame with it too. And yeah. Man, I'm getting teary right now, but that just, it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because there's absolutely zero shame in it. But unfortunately, everybody who's been through it feels a lot of shame and blames themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's where being able to talk to people, like you said, that you feel safe with is so important, and know that you can talk to people without being judged. And there are a lot of people that are more than happy to do that for you and, you know, shower you with love
and
understanding.
There's some great podcasts too.
Yeah.
There's one, it's really heavy. It's hard for me to listen to, but it's because they're speaking truth, but it's called Love More. And it's about like body image and like, it's like about the anti-diet revolution, which is
awesome.
That has probably helped me the most, but everybody's different. But
yeah.
Just realizing that, I'm addicted to this diet thing and I don't have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like on the flip side too, I struggled with so much shame and it took me forever to be able to talk about any of this. The way I was able to start was just by journaling because I still do. I write like 3 pages every morning, stream of consciousness. And that's because I do the artist way. I don't know if you know that.
I love that book.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they'll always do the morning pages because that has been so healing. And then if I wanted to start coming out with my trauma and talking to people about it, I was literally able to go back and like read some entries and like, okay, that's how I articulate it and use that as a jumping off point.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that Julie Cameron. So much.
Yeah.
I love that. Get the so book.
I need to start doing that. I read every morning. I read Melody Beattie's Letting Go. It's just like a daily, like little prayer every single day.
Yeah.
Not a prayer.
And like an affirmation?
Ends with an affirmation that says like, ask God. I don't believe in God, but I don't, it's not about that for me. It's sure. just, it's a message, you know?
Yeah.
And, but like today actually was on shame and guilt. Like it's just a little, like she just talks about it, how toxic it is. And then she says, you know, God, please help me today to release myself from guilt. And so I just like put that in my head. And even if I forget it, I start the day like that.
Yeah.
She has like different ones every day. But yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. I know this is kind of a heavier episode, but I think it's important to talk about it. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are going to find this very healing and helpful to listen to. So I can't thank you enough for sharing that.
Thank you. I'm a walking dark comedy.
We do have a listener question to get to before we wrap up. And this listener wrote in and said, I realize I have a strong crush on my supervisor at my university job. For context, she's 29 and I'm 22, finishing my undergrad in April. So I think we are somewhat similar as far as maturity, and I'm almost positive that she's queer. I think there's a chance she may like me too. She's always complimenting all my outfits or earrings or makeup. Also, really liked my Dyking Out shirt.
She is queer.
yes, she is telling you something. Let me tell you, my neighbor used to always tell Cecilia whenever she wore her Dyke Out With Me shirt, she'd be like, love the shirt. And then we're like, oh, she's just trying to tell us she's queer. Yeah. Anyway, back to the question. I'm pretty sure I can't date her while she's my supervisor. I've got to wait 4 months until my job is finished. I don't want to quit. Part of me wants to go on dates in the meantime with other people, but I'm thinking, what's the point if you're really interested in her and likely won't be into the other girls as much. If I wait to ask her out, though, and find out she's not interested, I risk wasting my time by not seeing other people. I've never navigated the whole workplace dating thing. What do I do? This really takes me back to being 21 and 22 and three months feeling like forever. And
yeah.
Time you can never get back in your life.
Don't take me back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, was that your crack age?
Yeah, it was.
Those are the crack. You shouldn't be working in the library. You should be out there smoking crack. until you guys can date. No. I mean, my two cents is, one, obviously, even though I have dated my coworkers before, in this scenario where you're a student and she works at a university, like, you definitely cannot do that. Yeah. Like, that will be very problematic. And, you know, you mentioned in your email that you're kind of like me, a serial monogamist. So once you have somebody in your sights, you're not really that interested in giving people the other time of day. I don't think it could hurt to go on a couple dates, but if you don't want to go on a couple dates and just want to get to know this person better as a friend, you know, I don't think you're going to like miss out on your soulmate in the meantime or anything like that. So as long as you're not like really needing casual sex, it's going to be April, like, so soon.
Yeah. You've already made it this far since November, right?
Yeah.
That's not that much longer to wait.
Yeah.
See what happens when you guys go to the women's restroom together.
Yes, that's great advice.
Push her in a bathroom stall.
Or like, if you have a common interest, like maybe like, oh, you like this band, let's go to this concert. Yeah. That's the end of March, you know?
Yeah.
And just kind of have something to look forward to and then feel it out and go from there.
Yeah, make plans. Go to a folk music festival in the spring.
Yeah, go to Lilith Fair.
I went up to, how I hit on Barb was I walked up to her and I fixed her collar.
Whoa.
Man, Samantha, you've got all the pro moves.
I'm a slut.
Let me tell you. I I'm like not smooth at all. I'm just like, you have something in your eye. Your fly's down. Buy me a drink.
My girlfriend was so smooth, and then like immediately once she had me, she just revealed herself to be a huge dork, and she's like, yeah, that was just pretend. Like, I'm very earnest and sappy, and like, I was like, oh, you got me.
Now that I know Allie, it seems very funny to picture her being very smooth.
She was so suave. To be fair, though, she was drinking at the time, and she's since quit. She had a drinking problem. But she's like, I wasn't smooth. I was drunk.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Well, best of luck to you, listener. Thanks. But I think it's going to be fine. I think you're overthinking it. But I know it's like very real and very frustrating to have to wait when you have your heart set on somebody, but the payoff will be worth it, even if she turns you down, which she won't.
No, she's complimenting your dyking out shirt.
Yeah.
That's all we need to know.
She's digging you.
And even if she's not gay, it's like, who's not going to be complimented by a girl going, like, you know,
right.
Even when somebody I'm not attracted to, like, hits on you, like, it still feels good. Like,
yeah.
It's not a big deal. Like, you're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Well, if you have a question for us, you can always send it to dykingout@gmail.com. And Samantha, where can people find you on the internet and find your music and listen to it?
They can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I use my Instagram more often, but you can stream my music on any streaming platform for free, or you can buy my record if you like vinyl. Online.
It's very pretty. It's a very pretty vinyl. It's not just basic black. It's like a reddish pink. Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to look like a Fellini film.
Yeah.
And those photos are real film. I'm real old school. They're not digital. Well, that was digitally designed, but
yeah,
the photo
itself
was taken on film.
I'm giving it a second look. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can buy it on Release Me Records. Just Google that, and I don't know the exact website. And it'll take you to my website, and you can just buy it on... You know, you can get the CD if you like CDs, vinyl, and I sell underwear too.
Yes.
Oh yeah, we noticed that.
We noticed that right when we walked in. I was like, merch panties.
I have all sizes. I made that a big, big point. I have all sizes, and I have boy shorts too for people who like that.
Awesome.
Nice.
And you can follow us online at Dyking Out everywhere. And if you want to hear about Melody squirting, we'll record an episode soon for our Patreon.
There's no turning back.
Yeah, no, it's like sign, sealed, delivered. We're doing this. That's patreon.com/dykingout. If you want, you can get like enamel pins or temporary tattoos. And you can also be a member on Himalaya, if that's more your thing, the Himalaya podcasting app. It's free to download, but then you can pay to be a member and get extra episodes. You can follow me personally at TGI Carolyn.
And you can follow me at Melody Kamali on all of the platforms.
Thank you so much for dyking out with us today, and we'll dyke out with you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.